This podcast contains descriptions of alcohol and drug abuse, sexual assault, adult themes, violence, and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. On June 3rd, 2011, a young woman named Lauren Spear disappeared after a night out with friends at Indiana University, never to be seen again. As a fellow IU student who grew up with similar circumstances, her story has haunted me. There were so many nights my friends and I could have ended up like her. This is the story about what happened that fateful night at a historic university and a quaint Midwest town with a hidden dark side. This is Finding Lauren. Several hours into the day of June 3rd, 2011, Lauren's boyfriend Jesse Wolf sent her a text that went unanswered. The Indianapolis Monthly reported that after he tried repeatedly to reach her on the phone, an employee at Sports finally contacted him to tell him that her phone was left there. Lauren's roommate at the time also reported that Jesse reached out to her to see if she had any idea where Lauren was and if they could meet on campus so he could retrieve a key to her apartment and look for her. When Lauren was nowhere to be found by late in the afternoon, Jesse reported her missing to the Bloomington police at around 4:30 p.m. that day. There is a common misconception that someone has to be missing for 24 hours in order to be considered a missing person. Although a police department might take a case more seriously after a certain period of time, the likelihood of a missing person being found decreases at about 50% after the first 48 hours, making it such a critical window. It's when investigators have the best chance of following up on leads before people's memories start to fade. The following is retired New York Police Detective Bill Clark.
This is 9 years old. I mean, that's hard. I mean, I don't know who spoke to whom and whatever. I don't know how many homicides or how many people, how many cases these cops in Bloomington do, and how, and the other thing you mentioned earlier, I can speak very highly about the New York City Police Department, how they don't give a shit about your uncle. They want to have the guys the best working on that case. So, you know, that doesn't mean that in Bloomington, some asshole detective whose fucking uncle is the chief or something is there, they don't give him all the help he needs. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, if they don't handle it from the jump, like after a couple of days, you know, it gets harder and harder to come up with the suspects, you know. You know, when you're talking about a case like that and involving a lot of people that care, you know, somebody could drop the ball, but somebody else is going to pick it up. It's not going to just lay there, you know what I'm saying?
There has been some speculation as to why Jesse Wolf so quickly reported her, as if that's some indication of guilt. At the same time, I think if one of my friends was missing by late in the afternoon, I'd probably freak out and do the same thing. Lauren's friends reached out to her older sister, Rebecca, to let her know that she was nowhere to be found and to alert her parents. Lauren's father, Robert Spearer, received a call from his oldest daughter, who tells him that Lauren's friends have reported her missing to the Bloomington police. The aftermath was extremely hectic. The Bloomington police began canvassing the areas where Lauren was reportedly last seen, which at the time was a maze of construction that has since been completed. One of the rumors circulating at the time was that her body might have been placed in the cement base of one of those construction sites.
Normally, depending on the age of the victim and the sex of the victim and the circumstances of her lifestyle with the boyfriend, is there a hostility? Is it an ex-boyfriend? Is she dating a new guy? When was she last seen? Those things indicate whether or not it's something to be concerned about, or women are known to, you know, especially women, younger women in their late teens, They fall in love with her, and they just want to spend the weekend with him, or a couple of days, or the husband says, for whatever reason, he doesn't like him. He says, I don't want to see you with that guy again. And she's sick in love with him, and away they go, with intention of someday, whether it be a week or 2 weeks or 3 days, calling the mother and let her know. Again, you got to do like a search to the life of this person. You got to go really back to what has that missing person been going through? Who are the possible suspects? Is her father in a dispute with the mother? You know, and that type of stuff. 20-year-old girl that goes missing, you know, initially you figure, well, she must be gone with some guy or something like that. But now when you do the tracking and you find out that, well, she wasn't with a boyfriend, she's not with a boyfriend, but she was bouncing around with a couple other guys, I would look first at the boyfriend. Is he pissed off, and did he get blow his top and whack her? And as long as she was seen after that without him, and he could, you know, account for his whereabouts and what he was doing, then you just, what if he can account for his whereabouts from the time she was missing, you know, the time she went missing, then, you know, you kind of take him off the radar. Anytime there's more than one person involved, the chances of getting ratted out are greater, because people's lifestyle is such that if you're working with guys that are, you know, dealing drugs, using drugs, whatever, if they get in the jackpot and they know that told them he killed somebody, or somebody told him that it did, and he's looking to help himself, he's going to give it up.
During the initial search, just after Lauren was reported missing, her wallet and keys were found in the alley along the route from her apartment to the 5 North townhomes. From the beginning, the police remained tight-lipped to the public and her family regarding any information they knew at the time. As I mentioned, the Bloomington police also failed to interview some key persons of interest at the start of the investigation. It has not been made public who they neglected, but we can assume it was some of Jay's friends who were rumored to have left the next morning in a hurry. Bloomington Police Captain Joe Qualters suggested some students who were with Lauren that night may have left before they could have been interviewed. This is one of the reasons why many people believe the police did not do a thorough job. Lauren's parents, Robert and Charlene Spearer, immediately began phoning hospitals and clinics in the Bloomington area to see if anyone matching Lauren's description had been admitted. Wave 3 News reported that Robert Spearer said the last time he heard from his daughter was the day before she disappeared, and nothing seemed out of the ordinary. As we know, Lauren suffered from a medical condition called long QT syndrome, a heart rhythm disorder that can cause fast and chaotic heartbeats and, more severely, cardiac arrest. Due to her heart condition, her parents urged anyone who might be with her to please take her somewhere that she can get medical attention. I can only imagine how her parents felt in this moment. I think back to my mom on that day we arrived in Indiana, how freaked out she was when she logged onto the IU website just to be reminded of a parent's worst nightmare. I've spoken to her a lot about that day and what she remembers. Of course, she was secretly wishing I'd change my mind or say I didn't feel comfortable going to school there. I was going out a lot during that time when I transferred to Indiana and was definitely putting myself at risk. My parents were also both keeping tabs on the investigation as it continued well into my time there. They would closely monitor my behavior online, and like clockwork, I'd receive calls every Sunday morning about taking photos with red cups in them. We all know what happens at college, Kira. You don't need to advertise it, they would say. They would advise me not to go out as much and focus on my schoolwork. We'd fight about it, and I'd always have some rationalization, but as parents often are, they were right. But when you are that age, you are blissfully unaware, and their concern for my safety didn't make sense to me until now. The Spearers arrived in Bloomington on June 4th to begin a series of searches in the days immediately following Lauren's disappearance. Little did they know at the time, they'd remain in Bloomington for months after. Many of their friends and acquaintances flew out to Bloomington to offer their support. Volunteers showed up to begin the ritual of 3 daily searches for her. At 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m., search parties were executed, drawing nearly 1,000 people a day. A Facebook group dedicated to finding Lauren generated close to 75,000 followers within the first week. The following is a clip from members of the Bloomington community recalling their search efforts immediately after Lauren's disappearance.
And I saw a handwritten sign that, you know, was that said missing. You know, it had her picture and some information. And I remember my friend had walked in, and I stopped for a second. I called him back to look at this.
When we learned about the volunteer searches, we began to make student groups and community groups and faculty and staff aware that she had disappeared. And so we helped organize those searches, and we participated. Lots of faculty and staff and students participated in those searches, just doing anything that we could to try to find Lauren.
Maybe because we come from similar backgrounds, but this just seems inevitable. A person is missing. A young person. A good person. No matter the price of the flight or what you're doing, this is something you would do for someone you love. And proves just how good of people Lauren was surrounded by and how many people's lives she touched. Clearly, the sentiment was the same for those who loved her. When word got out about Lauren, cameras and news vans swarmed the blocks outside of Smallwood Plaza. It was a complete frenzy. The Herald Times was the first media outlet to run a story on her disappearance, which was followed by a slew of celebrities, including Kim Kardashian, Ryan Seacrest, and Stephen Colbert, offering support on Twitter. By June 7th, Lauren's disappearance made national news as both The Today Show and Good Morning America ran segments on her. Lauren's friends gave public interviews talking about what an incredible person she was and how loved she was and how they were in complete disbelief that something like this could happen to her.
It started, they were meeting over at Smallwood and everyone was heading out to go and do those. And I was able to, go out and look with people. And, I remember specifically going down with a bunch of people. Actually, I believe a bunch of them were from Westchester, and they'd all come down to look, and I went with them because I know the area. We had this whole area by train tracks, and I remember we all looked through there, and every little sound, every thing, every snap of a twig or whatever, it was, looking and sort of hoping to be the ones that would find her, well.
The searches were grueling and emotionally draining. Every day it was hot and sticky. Groups wandered through nearby forests and divers searched the nearby lakes and reservoirs. Even IU basketball coach Tom Crean showed up to help. The Bloomington police had canine units as well as traffic checkpoints set up. Anything to help find clues. A contingent from Texas EquiSearch also arrived in Bloomington a few days into the search to help find Lauren. The EquiSearch is a nationally renowned search team of horse-mounted volunteers who have helped look for high-profile missing persons like Natalie Holloway and Kaylee Anthony. The areas surrounding Indiana University are heavily wooded with a lot of open spaces. Volunteers were asked to report anything that might look suspicious. The Spearers also made a public offer of $100,000 reward for anyone with information that could lead to the daughter's safe return.
I think we were all in such shock, like, she's missed. Like, to us, I mean, we were all stuck in our little bubble. We, to think someone you knew as actually missing or not just maybe, like, sleeping out or out of friends or just, not answering our text messages for a day or whatever. Within the next few days, we started searching, putting up posters, reaching out to all the news channels to put the word out there. I stopped going to classes. I was telling you that all I had to do was email my teacher and say, hey, I knew Lauren and I'm going to be searching for her. And I was excused from class after Lauren went missing. For most of my classes, I was excused.
By June 10th, the Bloomington Police Department acknowledged that they had 10 persons of interest, including the boys Lauren was with the night of her disappearance. During the searches on June 11th, the Bloomington police decided to run the case on America's Most Wanted in hopes of generating tips. And it did. Hundreds of people called in after it aired, but apparently nothing substantial came from the episode. Day after day, the searches turned up empty-handed. I had friends searching for her during this time that were also staying for summer session. One of them grew up with Lauren and had plans to see her in the next few days. I remember hearing just how exhausting and traumatizing the whole experience was. You're desperate to find something, anything, and it's sad. You almost hope to see her laying somewhere because then at least she can be brought back to her family to rest in peace. After a few weeks of searching, the number of volunteers began to decline. By June 13th, searches involving the public were reduced from 3 per day to 2, with about 500 people still coming out to look for Lauren. It's crazy to think that people were already giving up. Charlene Spearer continued to urge her daughter's friends to come forward with information. Sadly, this will be a recurring theme as the months go on. Corey Rossman and Mike Beth both submit to DNA tests during this time.
We would all hear different things. There were rumors and someone heard this from this FBI agent or whoever it was, and or this psychic. They were reaching out to psychics. So a psychic would say, I'm seeing her face down in the lake over by the quarries or wherever that was. And so then we'd go search there. And that area is huge. We used to hike up there. I mean, a million of us would go and we would just spread for hours. Just spread looking in the areas. We'd go there. We would do driving around. Like, that's when I started to see what was outside Bloomington, the sketchier parts. We would drive around, but mainly in like the wooded areas where like the quarries were and stuff like that. 10th and College, like, putting up posters was another thing. Like, sometimes we wouldn't be searching. Sometimes I would just literally be putting posters on every telephone pole and everything else all over. We print so many posters. I don't know. There were so many different theories. There was a building, apartment building, that was being built at that time right next to 10th and College. And there were theories that she like fell in the cement and something happened and that they, she's like buried there. That made me feel unsafe, knowing that just like, again, is Bloomington not as safe as I thought it was? That, coming back for our sophomore year and then junior and senior, she was always like on my mind, I guess, more because I was there and went through it and everything. But I think that after that summer and maybe a little bit into sophomore year, the searching kind of stopped and we kind of went back to normalcy.
There were so many days I spent walking around campus and the thought would cross my mind, maybe she's hiding in plain sight. Maybe one of these days I'll be the one to just stumble upon her. Maybe there was an area that was overlooked and she'll be there. I can't stop thinking about the effects of a traumatic experience that has no resolve, like an ongoing missing persons investigation. For her parents, family, friends, and even the boys being scrutinized as persons of interest, this never-ending saga is exhausting, like a nightmare you can't wake up from. Something like this can define you, challenge who you thought you were, make you reconsider yourself and your surroundings. However, while some people were still out partying as if nothing happened, many people stopped completely out of guilt or anxiety. Some people were deeply affected.
I think seeing the people change was the craziest, because we came back to school and, like I said, everyone was a little bit scared or nervous. It was just like a different feel. It was just everything was a little bit more sad. I think everyone at first was scared when they came back. But I think that the people that were actually like changed and affected. I watched one of my friends completely change. It's just like all of these possibilities of what happens or like what she was last doing. I feel like they can't understand how it happened, that they can't accept it. Like, you can't get over something like that if you don't have closure.
Here is Dr. Robin Stern again.
So it's hard enough to heal, to move forward, to grieve when you've lost someone you love. But when you don't know if you've lost someone you love to death or they've just gone missing and they're somewhere you don't know. How do you deal with that? I mean, it's devastating. Obviously, we've heard her parents talking. It's hard as a parent to even imagine how they get up every day and face the world. And I know I'm not alone in saying that. It's hard to imagine what moving forward even means. It doesn't. There is no moving forward. You are moving forward in your life, but you're certainly moving with Lauren in this case every single day. And for the people whose lives she's impacted, and for the people who have lived on that college campus with the haunting memories and knowledge of what has happened, there's something that Pauline Boss has called ambiguous grief. And the way she recommends dealing with it is to hold both ideas, like Lauren may be dead and she may not be dead. Because there's no such thing as closure. There's simply acceptance, the choice to accept that one thing may be true and may not be true. That is the reality. You don't know.
The inability to share key details and release information that could be helpful, such as surveillance footage or information on potential suspects, has certainly caused many people to question the intentions of the Bloomington police, especially when you think about where we are today and how much distrust there already is when it comes to police and their motives. A case like this would undoubtedly shape someone's opinions on the police, specifically a small-town police bureau, and likely make them cynical. In comparison to other cases that have occurred on other college campuses, some in very rural areas as well, the police were willing to share whatever they had in hopes of triggering any sort of memory or reaction, and it helped. So who do you trust when it feels like the people who are sworn to protect you aren't being fully transparent? Who do you turn to? The few times footage or information was released, hundreds, if not thousands, of tips were called in. The media in attendance showed up hoping for some new details to share with the public, which, as we know, were sparse. Their job is to be truth seekers and share important information with the public by asking the tough questions. The Indy Star reported that during the initial days of the search, the media was pushing police for more information about the investigation, which had been largely conducted in secret, and also questioned why the police haven't interviewed all of the persons of interest. How is that even possible, that they were unable to interview key persons of interest during the most crucial time period? It seemed like things were mishandled from the beginning. But then again, with such a sensitive scenario, what is considered protocol?
I would only give information to the public if I felt it helps the case, or the reverse being it doesn't hurt the case any. You know what I'm saying? If the video is her just walking down the street and there's nobody else, there's no cars involved, why are you giving it to them? Why show it to the press? Why give a show it to anybody? It's nothing there that they have. You know, plus, you don't want to taint the girl's image by the last vision they see of her is staggering down the fucking street. You know, that could really hurt the family rather than help them. I would definitely want to keep the family involved at least orally. I would not want to necessarily show that picture, the video of this daughter staggering down the street, unless she's with somebody that I'm trying to identify, you know. But a 20-year-old girl, where there's no indication of anything but the fact that she was drunk one night, that, you know, without one of those guys being seen with her or owning up to it or being stupid enough to tell somebody he did it, it's going to be hard, you know.
As the weeks went on, the press conferences became less frequent and the public searches stopped. All of the boys who were with Lauren that night immediately hired lawyers. However, what might appear as a red flag is not super unusual in a situation where you want to be protected. I know if I were ever in a situation I could be blamed for, I'd want the best representation out there to protect me, and I know my parents would want the same. The Innocence Project has determined that 25% of wrongful conviction cases overturned by DNA testing involved false confession. This is largely due to police intimidation tactics and coercing suspects into wrongful admission. The law is complicated, and everyone has a right to a lawyer. But the lawyers hired by the boys in question provided another barrier for the Spear family hoping to uncover any information possible to find their daughter. The only other crucial piece of information released during those initial few weeks of the search was that of a white pickup truck, which I will address in the next episode. The Indy Star reported that the Bloomington police released images from an apartment building's security camera that show a white pickup truck traveling in the area where Lauren Spear was last seen within 10 minutes of when she went missing. The images spur another 500 tips and countless conspiracy theories, but no answers. By the end of June, the police had completed interviews with friends and family as well as their daily briefings. The message was clear. The trail was cold.
It doesn't feel like it's been that long, you know, just because I'm constantly hearing about it on the news all the time. I'm even doing research on it just because I'm concerned, you know, about this girl. I want these parents to be able to find her. You know, I talk to my parents all the time and they tell me, they ask me every day if they found her. You know, they're just as concerned as, you know, probably her parents are, because they would hate for that to happen to me. And I'm sure any other girl here in town, you know, their parents would feel the same. But yeah, it feels like it just happened yesterday. Just because, you know, not a whole lot of progress has been made. They're still talking about some of the same leads and the same evidence and the same people that were involved since day one.
It got to a point in early August where Robert and Charlene Spear drove out to Terre Haute, Indiana, just a little more than an hour outside Bloomington, where the police conducted a 9-day search of 4,100 tons of garbage in the Sycamore Ridge landfill. This is where all the trash from Bloomington is brought. The Spears described this as being one of the hardest moments of their lives. Watching as excavators sifted through tons and tons of garbage and debris, still hoping that maybe their daughter would be there. She wasn't. Can you imagine how devastating that is? Standing in a landfill of trash for days on end, wondering if your child is there? In September, when I arrived at school, Lauren's absence was felt and made more apparent through countless missing posters and the change of attitude of her friends. Everything was further heightened because the Spears and their private investigators spent many months in Bloomington continuing to question every single person who might have been involved or know something, and they weren't exactly discreet. It was also apparent that life was moving forward. Sadly, for a lot of the school, her disappearance didn't hold much weight. She was one out of 40,000 students. Lauren's friends had returned and tried to continue to lead a normal college life. I'd see them out. There were parties, there were pre-games, there were tailgates. Many of them still lived in Smallwood. It seemed like there was a fine line between never forgetting and moving forward. Can you blame them? All the signs and posters that were plastered everywhere were slowly starting to be weathered or torn down. It was as if people were tired of focusing on tragedy, but because of all the changes and the strict rules being implemented, were still hyper-focused on what happened. I also think that the town of Bloomington was tired of the mayhem that was unleashed that summer. I got the impression everyone was trying hard to go back to how it was, but it wasn't that easy.
They didn't want it to become such a public thing. They used to have meet in like different buildings in IU, like randomly, I think. They would with, you know, detectives and everyone else, but like, I don't know. It was always different places. I remember hearing like they were there for a while.
The Daily Beast reported that despite Lauren's disappearance, several persons of interest, namely the boys in question, have been spotted at football tailgates and around campus drinking and partying. Robert Spear even questioned how people involved in the case could so easily reengage themselves in normal life.
I could see how it would be easy for people to... for some people to give up after such a long time. But, I mean, I wouldn't want that for me. You know, I mean, you know, it's hard to... I can only imagine, or not even, I can't even imagine, like, what her family is feeling right now. You know, I know it's been really hard, but, I mean, and especially as time goes on, but to be approaching an anniversary, that's really difficult. It's really difficult to deal with.
One thing substantially different, which I mentioned, was the severity in which the bars, particularly sports, handled its patrons. In September 2011, Kilroy Sports Bar was cited on two alcohol-related charges concerning Lauren being served there the night of her disappearance. A report was sent by Indiana State Police to the Alcohol and Tobacco Commission to review their license for selling alcohol, as it was discovered Sports had let Lauren in with a fake ID. Although they were never suspended, they did employ undercover cops to carefully watch every single person entering and exiting, which changed the entire dynamic of our social life. It became a known thing not to go near the bars if you weren't 21 unless you wanted to be arrested. This was another reason why students were scared.
I remember after Lauren disappeared, because we were all home, it was over the summer, and like news spread, it's all anyone could talk about because it's really scary when something is so unknown and there are so many things that could have happened. And where she was last seen, I guess, was we've been there so many times and it just seems so impossible to us that like anything like that could have happened. So I remember like a lot of people asking me about it, asking if I knew her, what I thought had happened, and people getting really, really scared, like asking if I was scared to go back. And I think that freaked me out a little bit. I think that definitely started to scare me. It wasn't that I was scared that like something was going to happen to me. It was more like scary thinking about that she's somewhere out there and no one knows. And it was sad.
In mid-September, the Spearers hired New York City-based private investigators Bo Deedle and Michael Cerebolo to assist in moving the case along. Bo has gone on record to say that he wishes they were brought on from the beginning, knowing how mismanaged the case has been. Bo is a former New York City police detective later turned PI. He assisted briefly in the Natalie Holloway case and also ran for mayor of New York City. He has helped solve some of New York City's toughest investigations. From their initial involvement in the case, it was evident to them that they were dealing with an ill-equipped police department. I was able to speak with the Spears investigators. Naturally, they were more interested in seeing what I knew. Their office is decorated with framed newspaper clippings of their success in solving cases, and in typical detective fashion, I was offered coffee and donuts upon my arrival. Mike Cerevolo showed me two large drawers full of binders and files. "This is all her," he said, an image that sent shivers down my spine. He carries Lauren's photo in his wallet everywhere he goes. It's clear that they've become more than a part of the investigation, but a part of the Spearer family. They spent a substantial amount of time in Bloomington following her disappearance and have just as good of a read on what goes on in Bloomington as I do. From what I was told, this investigation is very much alive and receiving tips. They are still following up on leads, hoping to bring her and her family justice. If anyone has any information on what happened to Lauren, please do not hesitate to reach out to them. What's so crazy about this aftermath is the fact that we are still living it. When trying to tell the story of what the months after Lauren's disappearance was like, it can be broken down into phases. The initial phase of shock and disbelief and heavy searching, the next phase of information and interest scaling back with the realization that she might be gone forever, and the phase of where we are now, a decade later, without much of a leg to stand on anymore. I think it got to a certain point where the Bloomington Police Department was like, what else can we do here? Lauren's friends and family began taking matters into their own hands, but were met with roadblocks at almost every step. Because Lauren's case is still an active investigation, it's been really difficult to find sources and to get people to open up about this. I understand how sensitive it is and the anxiety-inducing effects it causes. But even friends we've shared, fellow reporters on the case, declined my requests to talk. The former detective actually said to me, and I'll leave his name out for privacy, quote, "Unfortunately, I will be unable to speak with you regarding this topic. My experiences with the case would leave me in a difficult spot." The department's stance has been to not share information outside of any specific public information requests, and even those only receive very limited information. The case is still being actively investigated, and I wouldn't want to inadvertently say anything that might harm the investigation. Even though I am retired, I still feel very strongly about maintaining the necessary confidentiality required in the investigation. I am sorry, I won't be able to help, and wish you the best of luck. The months that followed the initial search also turned up numerous bodies that at any one moment felt like it could be Lauren. They ultimately were not. It was an emotional roller coaster of feeling hope that we finally reached a resolution only to be let down. It was like rubbing salt into a wound. By late April 2012, Charlene Spearer acknowledged for the first time that she doesn't think her daughter is alive. "We're trying to be realistic," she said. "We know that if she had the chance to reach out to us, she would have done it."
So like a lead where they found someone's body, I remember we were all like so sick and nauseous waiting to see if it was her, because they found remains of some girl and it wasn't Lauren. It was someone that disappeared like years earlier.
May 2013 would have been Lauren's graduation. At the IU commencement ceremony, University President Michael A. McRobbie acknowledged Lauren Spearer's absence as a, quote, "member of the Indiana University community who should be with us today, but who is not." He calls her disappearance a terrible and unimaginable strain on her family and friends. Lauren's friends were graduating and preparing to leave the place that they should have left with Lauren. This was a true marker that life was moving on, but the Spearers were trapped in time. Robert and Charlene Spearer made one last attempt at gathering information from the boys with Lauren by filing a civil suit in late 2013 that accused Jay Rosenbaum, Corey Rossman, and Mike Beth of wrongful death. The lawsuit alleged negligence and violation of Indiana's Dram Shop Act, which allows for a person injured in an alcohol-related incident to file a civil suit for damages against the person who caused the accident, as well as the establishment that sold or served alcohol to the intoxicated person. The attorneys for all three men urged the judge to throw out the lawsuit. According to the Indy Star, the case against Mike Beth was dismissed first in December 2013. Beth is the only one the Spearers do not claim gave their daughter any alcohol that night. Almost a full year after the Spearers filed the suit, the federal judge ultimately dismissed the civil negligence lawsuit against Jay Rosenbaum and Corey Rossman. U.S. District Judge Tanya Walton Pratt ruled, quote, "Although the court has great sympathy for the Spearers, they have failed to present sufficient evidence that Corey Rossman and Jason Rosenbaum were at fault for their daughter's disappearance." The two men have argued that the Spearers have no evidence of what happened to their daughter and whether her level of intoxication that night actually caused her alleged injury or death. The Spearers were unable to offer proof that the defendants were the proximate cause of any verifiable injury to Lauren. Disappearance by itself is not legally deemed an injury, so proof of some injury was required to support their claim. Further, how can you hold two men responsible for not doing more to help Lauren when the two in question were intoxicated and unable to fully care for themselves? The Spearers were back at square one. The following audio is taken from an interview that Robert and Charlene Spearer gave to the Journal News.
It's now almost 2 years to the day since our daughter Lauren disappeared, the morning of June 3rd, 2011. Lauren was a sophomore, just completed her sophomore year at Indiana University, was out with some friends for the evening. Ended up in the apartment of three boys after being with one of the boys at a bar. And the three boys claim that Lauren left one of the boys' apartment at approximately 4:15 in the morning, went up the street, and was never seen again. We are still involved with efforts to find Lauren. We have contact with the Bloomington police. It's still an active case. We have private investigators. We've conducted our own searches personally. It's an everyday event for us. We're still working very diligently to find her. And we are not going to stop until we have some answers and find out exactly what happened to her that night.
Life without Lauren is very difficult. She's an integral part of our family, and we miss her desperately. And Rebecca, our older daughter, got married this past year, and Lauren was there with us every step of the way. Living 2 years without Lauren has been a nightmare. You go from talking to somebody every day or getting just a text message from her every day, just constant communication with your child. Or Lauren was great to send me a card or just take time walking home from a class. She would call me and just say, hello, what are you doing, Mom? And it's just such a loss, and there's such ache in your heart. It can't be replaced. She's just a great girl. I just adored her, and I miss her terribly.
January 17th, 2021 would have been Lauren Spear's 30th birthday, a milestone. Charlene Spear took to Twitter in honor of her daughter while also offering a stinging rebuke of anyone who is withholding information about her daughter's whereabouts. Charlene said on her personal Twitter page, quote, Lauren would have been 30 today, if only. She continued on the @news on Lauren S. page. It's a milestone birthday for Lauren Spear today, her 30th. Lauren would have been thriving in her career, maybe married, and maybe even a mom. She would have loved being an aunt to her nephews. Her bright light and big personality would have touched so many. Happy birthday, Lauren. Charlene Spear turned her attention to those who may have information pertaining to Lauren's disappearance. She wrote, "For those who know what happened to Lauren, do you think about her? What's your life like now? Does it haunt you? Do you think about her at night when you're falling asleep? What about when you are alone in the car? Does your wife know? What will your kids think when they find out?" She continued, "For those that know, your pain is different than ours. We don't live in fear. We live remembering the beautiful person she was. You live wondering when the truth will come out, when someone will slip and come forward. It will always haunt you, and it should until the day we find Lauren." She concluded, "Remember, nothing ever truly disappears. Lauren didn't vanish while hanging out with her friends on the weekend in college. People don't just disappear, neither did she. Someone knows what happened, and the truth will come out. We have never stopped believing that." On the final episode of Finding Lauren.
Wide open with the fact that could it have been when she got to College Avenue, some local yokel there was passing by, sees a beautiful young girl there, and all of a sudden, oh, let me give you a lift, get into the car. And is that wide open? Absolutely.
The white truck, I remember when we all saw it, we were like, that's it. Like, that's obviously.
Would it be just great if we had full cooperation from all the boys, no lawyers, full cooperation, take polygraphs, everybody, and eliminate them? We don't have that, so I can't eliminate nobody.
We know that if she had the chance to come home or reach out to us, she would have done it.
Lauren Spear's case is still an open investigation. Anyone with information regarding her disappearance, please reach out to Bo Deedle and Associates. For updates from her family, follow the official Lauren Spear updates page on Facebook. Finding Lauren is hosted and produced by me, Kira Breslin, edited by J. Cody Spellman, engineering and original music by Monty Weber, logo design by Josh Stauffer. Special thanks to USA Today Networks for use of media. For links to sources, clips, and more information, you can follow @FindingLauren Podcast on Instagram.